Dave O'Sullivan, well.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back in Ovalos here about 4 years ago, and it's great to be back. So tonight I'm going to be mainly reading from two books. One is called Vocal Chords, and it's kind of longer form poetry, so that came out in 2014. And the other book is called A Train Hurtles West, and that's a book of haiku poetry that came out just last summer. So generally at readings I kind of mix up the two, longer form and shorter form poetry. And I find, I don't always plan it, but there's often thematic links between longer ones and the shorter ones, so I try and kind of put them together. And I'll be reading a few haiku from an earlier haiku collection called Initial Response also. So these two, I brought a few copies of these along, so they're on sale at a special launch price of €10. And I know a lot of you are broke after the weekend, so this one is actually available free to download from the Haiku Foundation. It's out of print, but my publisher and I decided we'd allow it to be out there for free on the World Wide Web. So I'm going to start with a poem called Sunday Women Drying Their Hair, and it's an ekphrastic poem, so it's based on a painting by a guy called John Sloan. And I don't think it really needs any explanation, so I'll just go straight in there. So it's called Sunday Women Drying Their Hair. Bare-legged, in light pale clothing, three young women stand on an urban rooftop. New York, probably, or some other big city. They are letting the wind dry their hair while white garments sway on a line behind them, and the chimney beside them casts a long shadow. It is 1912, and Sloan's subjects could be sisters. One redhead in a green skirt, one brunette, one blonde. The brunette looks approvingly at the redhead, while the blonde brushes her hair, which hangs like a curtain, her head tilted to the right, the left hand on her hip for balance. I imagine they're chatting about the night before, what they did, who they saw dancing, girl talk. One of them could be softly humming After the Ball or something jazzy. No world war to bother them yet, and no depression. This year forever marked by a ship called the Titanic. This is how I would like my three sisters to be. Close, relaxed, hanging out happily. The brunette smiling at the redhead. The blonde, still blonde-haired and carefree. And me, the youngest girl, looking on from the gallery, taking it all in. So since we're in spring, well, technically we're in spring, but weather-wise we're still in winter, really, but technically we're in spring. I'm going to read some spring haiku from the new book, and then I'll read some spring senryu. So senryu is really like, haiku is kind of nature, and senryu is human nature. So that's really the only thing that distinguishes them. So I'll just read some haiku and then some human nature haiku, senryu. Saturday morning. Spring sunshine on the moving mill wheel. Oak woodland, the path introduces us to Alder catkins. News of a fall, first daffodil. Spring evening light through an angel hair fern. Leafless lime trees, marshmallow magnolias, afternoon walk. Limestone outcrop, a wall of wild garlic emits its signature. May breeze blowing this field of dandelions to 1 o'clock. After the nightmare, noticing the first snowdrop. March sunshine, the email mentions spots on his lungs. Bank holiday Friday, he rearranges the bookstore shop front. Spring raindrops glittering the boy's sandy hair. April afternoon, we talk about everything under the sun. All I need, prayer flags, birds feeding, spring evening sun. And another kind of spring themed, since we're in that season, technically anyway. This is a bit more about spring cleaning. So I'm sure you've all got around to your spring cleaning and decluttering. Lots of people nodding. No, shaking their heads. So I have an epigraph here, which is a quote from William Morris, who was a 19th century artist, textile designer, writer. He was one of these people who did lots of things. And he says, "Have nothing in your homes that you do not know to be useful or believe to be beautiful." So that's a very good guideline when you're decluttering. It's like, is it useful? Yes, no. Is it beautiful? Yes, no. And if the answer is no to both, then you throw it out. So this is called objet d'art. "It sits on my desk, this translucent object of plum and yellow, forged on Murano Island as a boiled sweet, its wrapping destined never to be twisted off. I tried to gift it to a sculptor cousin who protested, too many objets d'art and too few spaces for them. And so it seems we're stuck with each other, I and this quaint Venetian pretty, its 70s sweater diamond pattern. It catches spring light as only glass can, stretching the length of my hand, just one swift move away from this sweet tooth." And that one is kind of set, well, it sort of, I suppose, originated in Venice. So I have a few haiku from around there as well. I have a friend living near Trieste, so I go and visit her every now and then. And it's a really lovely part of Italy, actually. So that area is called Friuli. So I have some haiku from Friuli that I'm going to read for you. "Grado promenade, daughter, linking mother, scentless oleander. Friuli dusk, an old woman in green closing her shutters. A lizard scuttles between two stones, World War I monument. Murano Island, an exchange of glances reveals a glass eye. Its heart shape taking some of the sting out, mosquito bite. August raindrops trying to catch up, city fountain. Crunch of karst underfoot, cicada song above, Rilke way. Such stillness, this clifftop castle, its stringed instruments. Miramar Castle, the view of Trieste clearer after last night's storm." And we'll stay in Southern Europe for a while then. I have a poem and some haiku from Madrid, which is a city I'm sure a lot of people here have visited, haven't they? Yeah. You know Madrid? Mm-hmm. That's nice. Thank you. People know. Good. So this is a poem I wrote in Madrid. And it's really a poem about being a lazy tourist. You know, when you're off somewhere and you kind of, you should be visiting this cathedral and this place and that place, and all you want to do is sit around in a street cafe and drink coffee and people watch. So really it's a poem about wanting to do that. Or doing it. And it's called Letting Go of Avila. "I could have travelled there today, could have walked its medieval walls and lit a candle for the vulnerables in the Basilica de San Vicente. I'm letting go of the eagle caves, the cathedral and the Monasterio de Santo Tomas, but most of all the Convento de Santa Teresa, housing her ring finger and her ring. She let go of wealth, of marriage, encouraged her sisters to leave off their shoes, moved beyond pain, beyond words of prayer, to a place of ecstasy, then tears. I'm letting go of all of this in the district of letters, where brass poems are set into the very ground. It is love alone that gives worth to all things." The last line is supposedly a quote from herself. St. Teresa. Okay, and I'm just going to follow that up with some Madrid haiku, which are kind of from the same trip, I think. Yeah, they're from the same trip. So they made their way into this collection. Palazzo Reale, a blackbird forages in the shade of a maze. Tortoises huddled on the indoor island, Atocha station. Rastro Market, making chords with his left hand, he plucks with his hook. Bullfighting on TV, you drink cans of beer, spear some chorizo. Lost in the military museum, a soldier at each turn. Royal Armory, children's metal suits shock me centuries later. Now, since it was Valentine's Day, I'm only reading one poem in concession to Valentine's Day, just one, right? So it is a love poem. It's a love poem to a baron and a man. And it's called New Drumbeat. I think I need some gin before I can read this one. I don't know if have any of you ever been to a Flack Hill?
Yeah.
It's a great, good crack, isn't it? I wrote this after my first Flack Hill experience in Listowel in County Kerry, and it was quite a blast. There's a lot of gin and tonic down the hatch, actually, so some of it's a bit blurry. So this is called New Drumbeat. And I thought I knew something about rhythm and the West. Watching my first Claire battering, feet feral on the floor of the harp and lion, I understand that dancing is the reason for all of these tunes. My hands try to keep time, the left one toning the new drum's oily skin, the right moving the tipper as we learnt in city lessons, wrist turning it like the key in the door to your house, where the fern is trained along the bathroom wall and the black cat stays, where I'm singing some of the old love songs to eager new ears. That's it, that's all the lerve you're going to get out of me tonight. But since that was set in Kerry, I'm going to read a few Kerry haiku from Initial Response, which was an earlier book of haiku. So it's a lovely spot, Kerry, isn't it? I'm sure you all go on your holidays there, no?
No.
Sometimes. Okay.
Maybe you want to go there, no.
Well, do you want to go there?
Kerry.
That's a lovely spot. Okay, so these are a few haiku from Kerry. Something moving uphill through the bluebells, Cottontail. 2,000 acres of Loch Curran, mosquitoes on the windscreen. Castle ramparts, bird's eye view of swallows wind reaping. Over the nettles, the white butterfly your cat loves to punch. August sunshine, wigwams of turf sods, final cut. Sandpipers graze, then take off as one, South Kerry sunset. I love sandpipers actually, it's probably my favourite bird. They're lovely, aren't they? So the next one I'm going to read is a poem about, actually it's another ekphrastic poem, now that I think about it. But it's a self-portrait by a woman artist. And it sits in the lobby of a posh hotel in Dublin. If I can find it now, good. And what they have is they have this kind of special afternoon tea, and they call it an art tea. I've never been in, actually, it's very expensive. I think it's 35 or 40 euro a pop to go in for your art tea. So you get your tea and your coffee, and then you get a special range of desserts. And each dessert has been designed to match the painting that's in the lobby of the hotel. Quite clever, really. And in their brochure they say, we think our art collection is good enough to eat. So it's a Marion hotel, just in case you're wondering, or if you suddenly win the lottery or something, you can go up to Dublin and have an art tea in the Marion hotel. So this is called, the reference is, the woman, the artist in question, had been married to William John Leech, who painted a convent garden in Brittany, you know that painting? So she's the nun in the Wimpole, is it a Wimpole?
Yeah.
That's her, but she was an artist herself, so this is her own self-portrait that hangs in there. I have another great story about how I heard about it, but I don't have time to tell you. Maybe over a drink later on. Okay, this is called Self-Portrait as Citrus Trio. Oh, Elizabeth, you look so vital in your blouse of lime sponge, covered loosely by the jacket of lemon jelly curd. But your crowning glory, the headscarf of orange schmoust, really takes the biscuit, matching the pendant with its hanging heart. It's a long way from the sunlit gardens at Concarneau, where you posed for your second husband, a novice in white. Here you are content to be your own muse and subject, this image now reduced to a tasty tricolour, nibbled delicately by high-heeled ladies with shopping bags full of folded garments. And just while we're on that food, I thought I'd read a few foodie haiku from Initial Response. Some of them are kind of, topical. At the salad bar, one man, one woman, apple on the side, untouched. Conversation interrupted, plate smashing, asparagus tips. 100 degrees, ice cold lemonade, warm banana bread. Pancake Tuesday, drips of honey on the restaurant review. Silent meal, we drink our wine at the same rate. Coffees after lunch, he picks out a heart-shaped chocolate. They're all very quiet. I don't know if that's good or bad thing.
Okay, good.
Now I have some poems about my parents, which are obviously, my parents are a big influence on all of us. And sadly, I've lost both my parents in the last 5 years. So that takes you time to reflect and think about the person and the impact they had in your life. So I have a few poems. I'll just start off with a couple of poems about my mother. And for the last 5 years of her life, she suffered from dementia, which is kind of a difficult illness, which is becoming a bit more prevalent now. So the first poem was written when she was well, in the full of her health, and she was a very vibrant, vivacious lady, and good fun. So this is written pre-dementia. And it's called You Could Go Anywhere in That Blouse. Summer 1996. But where should I go, Mum, in the blouse that washes like a dream? To the moon or Mars, maybe, or just out for strawberries and cream? Summer 2006. Her surprise call comes through on the freeway south of LA. I say, this will cost a fortune. Are your clothes working out okay? A really mother thing to ask, how are the clothes working out? And then the next one is was written when she was in the reasonably early stages of dementia, so she was still walking and talking a lot and giving out a lot. And it's a villanelle, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with this form. It's repeating lines in it. It's a rhyming form. It's repeating lines. It's a form I like a lot. And this is called New Time Waltz. I don't think it needs any explanation. New Time Waltz. Round and round the nursing home she goes, stopping now and then just to complain. Her broken thinking keeps us on our toes. Even when it's time to have a doze, her restless spirit will not be contained. So round and round the nursing home she goes. She knows the names that she and father chose, but other things we simply must explain. Her broken thinking keeps us on our toes. Unlike before, all arguments are closed. I bite my tongue, the conversation wanes, as round and round the nursing home we go. Inside her room, a single long-stemmed rose, a card whose message she cannot retain. Her broken thinking keeps us on our toes. Today's events are blurred, old memories flow. Who knows what really happens in the brain? round and round the nursing home she goes. Her broken thinking keeps us on our toes. Thank you. And I also had a sequence of haiku from the nursing home. To be honest, it wasn't all doom and gloom. There was some good fun times in the nursing home with all these people with dementia. Like in some situations, you just have to laugh. You know what I mean? Things arise and there might be a little bit of black humour, but it's not all grim. So if you are facing into that situation, if any of you are facing into it, you know, it's not. It's, you know, you do have a bit of levity here and there. So these are some haiku from the nursing home. A single strand of tinsel wrapped around her bed rail, Christmas Eve. Slowly she peels the easy peel orange, afternoon visited. Her bony back against my palm, Mother's Day. Rain-filled Monday, nursing home residents sing, que sera, sera. Once again, covering my mum's hand with his, this stranger. A difficult visit, her wheelchair tires deflated. Okay, now for something different. I can find where I put it. It's a sonnet, again, another form that I like very much to write in. And this one I wrote in Portugal a couple of years ago. I was on holidays, and actually it kind of explains it, but it was the hotel we were staying in was an old Art Deco cinema. And inside all the rooms they had stills from various films, black and white stills, and in the foyer as well. So I was there for a couple of nights, and I got kind of very absorbed in the still that was in my room, which was Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth. So I ended up writing this sonnet, and I'm going to tell you that it's going to be published in the Irish Times this year, sometime this year, I don't know when, but you can keep an eye out for it. So you're getting a sneak preview, and it's called Inside Room 102. Inside Room 102 of this Art Deco cinema hotel, a youngish Orson holds his second wife. A most erotic black and white embrace. His right hand firmly grasps her pale left arm. Her head tilts slightly back and to the left. The lips just barely parted with suspense. The lady from Shanghai is being shot. Tale of murder, lust, deception, guns. And Rita's shorter bleach blonde tresses are framing her new femme fatale, Elsa. Her neck and shoulders are completely bare. An eyelash casts a shadow on her cheek. She leans back for the kiss and holds her breath, then tumbles into drink, dementia, death. Very jolly ending. Now, I have some haiku then from Portugal. Again, I think the same trip, or I've been there for a couple of years, so. Around that anyway, Portugal, and there's a couple from Galicia as well, which is very close to Portugal, as you probably know. Bullring, tap tap of a cane on ground tiles. Supersized moon outshining the little lights of Porto. Laughter drifting up from the courtyard, first cloudy day. Last day of summer camp. A dead wasp lies on the granite windowsill. After dinner bat watch, they swoop down from the pines in ones and twos. After the swim, nectarine in my salty mouth. Hard to reach places, the sting of sunburn. Museum gardens, these oaks not found any further south. Now I'm going to move on to my dad, my dear old departed dad, who didn't have dementia before he died. He had heart failure. So the first one I'm going to read is a poem actually set when he was in his teens. It's a story that he used to tell about meeting John Charles McQuaid. Do you know who John Charles McQuaid is? He was Archbishop of Dublin at the time. You remember. You're old enough to remember. And apparently he had a role in drafting the Constitution of Ireland, which is one of the reasons why church and state are so entwined in this country. But hopefully not for too much longer. So my dad went to Blackmore College, and McQuaid was the college president, so that's how he would have known him. And he also lived next door to Devil Error, funnily enough. So when my dad wrote his first CV, he had John Charles McQuaid and Eamon De Valera as his referees on his curriculum vitae. It's kind of funny. So this is called Grand Pooh Bah. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Gilbert and Sullivan, any Gilbert and Sullivan fans?
Yeah.
So you've heard of the Mikado, which is probably the most popular opera. And Pooh Bah is a character in the Mikado. And Pooh Bah is kind of famous because he plays, he has a number of different roles. So he's Chief Justice, and he's the jailer, and he's got all these different titles and roles, okay? So I'm just telling you that because it's kind of relevant to the poem. So this is called Grand Pooh Bah, and the epigraph says, the college president was a regular guest in the house, that's De Valera's house, and eventually his advice was sought in a very important De Valera achievement, the drafting of a new constitution for the country. Imagine you at 15 or 16, in full costume and makeup, backstage after the show, smiling at proud relatives. The college president, your future referee with Dev, shakes hands with the boy performers. You wait your turn to speak. Tell me, how does one archbishop address another? It's my dad speaking. The Holy Ghost turns stony-faced, already moving away from your question, your chutzpah. He liked it. And I have another very short poem in memory of my dad as well. It's a triolet. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that form. It's kind of short form. I think I've only written one, actually. This is the only one I've written. And I just called it triolet, which is sort of a lazy title. One of the songs he'd sing was The Darling Girl from Clare. All the listeners would cling to each of the songs he'd sing. But now I find them haunting like a mantra or a prayer. One of the songs he'd sing was The Darling Girl from Clare. And I have some haiku as well. Actually, about 20 years ago I started, my dad was kind of giving out about Father's Day and how commercial it was, and how he didn't really like getting Father's Day cards because they were, you know, just propping up this industry and Hallmark and all this kind of thing. So I said, well, instead of buying you a card, I'll write you a Father's Day haiku. So I started a tradition of writing a haiku for Father's Day every year, and I kind of continued it after he died as well. I get to write the odd one as well. But these aren't the Father's Day... how am I for time? You can read some Father's Day haiku as well. I'll read a few. Okay, so I'll read a few Father's Day haiku, and then a few then after he died. Okay, I've forgotten about these ones. Okay. Oh no, that's Father's Day. No, I won't read them. It's Father's Death Day. I don't want to be too morbid tonight.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll just do the remembering Father. It's still a little bit morbid, but they're not as morbid as Father's Death Day. Okay, so this is remembering Father. Removing the red rose bush from my garden to your grave, Father's Day. Muscovite glinting in October sunshine, Dad's new headstone. First anniversary, we choose not to enter the garden of remembrance. Dad's songs on his old guitar restrung. Spectacular sunset on his second birthday, without him. Third anniversary, a curlew crying his flight eastward. Fourth anniversary, these city people rushing towards their deaths. Sorry, that was a bit morbid. Okay, now I'm going to give you a choice. There are two kind of newish pieces of work. One of them is kind of a tribute to David Bowie. I haven't even talked about the other one yet.
It doesn't matter.
The other one is kind of morbid, actually. The other one is called Funeral Season.
Definitely doesn't matter, no.
I had a sort of spate of funerals from September to December of last year. And it's like, I was kind of dreading the phone ringing. I was like, oh, Jesus, another funeral. So do you want the funeral haiku or do you want the Bowie tribute? Okay, hands up for the Bowie tribute. I'm a real teacher. Okay, hands up for funeral. They've got the duende, but they've lost. Okay, so this is haiku is basically, it's kind of prose and haiku combined, right? Now I don't write very many of them, but I have friends who write lots of them. But I was inspired to write one after Bowie died. Something sparked haiku. So it's very short. So there's kind of text and then a haiku and then more text and then a haiku. So I'll pause a little bit between the text, between the prose and the haiku, so you'll know the haiku's coming. And it's called "Oh, You Pretty Things." Our older sister's treasured hunky-dory album once fell out of its sleeve onto a hard floor. The disc looked like someone had taken a neat bite out of it, and one track on each side was lost forever. Oh, so carefully placing the needle onto track number 2. Bowie's Let's Dance, along with other tracks on that later album, backgrounded my college years. We moved our young bodies to all of those songs. We could be anyone or anything. We could be heroes, despite the biting recession that prevailed at the time. High unemployment, our dance jumps higher. I'm going to finish off with the title. It's a title poem of the book of longer form poetry called Vocal Chords, and the poem is called Vocal Chords, funny enough. And it's set in Leitrim. Do we have someone from Leitrim? Anyone from Leitrim here? No.
Is your friend from Leitrim? Conor McManus.
He's not here.
He's in Leitrim.
He's in Leitrim. He's in Leitrim. He's gone from Cork to Leitrim, and I've gone from Dublin to Cork to read a poem about Leitrim. Okay. I don't know if any of you know the Joe Mooney Summer School is on there every summer. It's a trad kind of festival. I haven't been for a while, but I wrote this after I spent a week up there. Again, I don't think anything really needs. You all know what a baron is, and you all know. Yeah. No, I don't think it needs any explanation. It's called Vocal Chords with a H. The Sligo train takes me to the singing place, the place where mines and quarries can be treacherous, and the undertaker buys more than his fair share of drink. Where the famine graveyard is a single field, the sun shining on its silent slope this afternoon as my friend refuses to play a flute lament. I'm here to sing, and sing I do in a classroom of women who have journeyed to this town to do the same. We learn 20 songs together, from bleak Rosie with the red jacket and the ready laugh. We sing about the good ship kangaroo, the bonny bunch of roses, and the verdant braes of Skreen. We sing next door to the harpers and fiddlers. We drink tea with the box players and the set dancers. We nod to the baron and whistle players. We sing. Our instruments are invisible. We carry them everywhere. They are our own, and only they can marry the words to the tunes. In Monica's bar, we swap songs like beads, applause stringing this one to the next. We sing of emigration, of love charmed or doomed, of death and Napoleon. We can't stop singing except to listen to another song. We don't want the singing to stop, but the voices will not hold out forever without a break. The train home is silent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maeve.